numbers, plants, animals, fun, colours, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the secret kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Right here on Revolution Radio.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Conversations with Eagle Flower. This 15th day of November, 2023. Another Ides in our pathway here, isn't it? As always, I like to welcome all the listeners of Revolution Radio as we do come from around this world, from many cultures, creeds, and nationalities. And yes, we truly do come to this table of life to learn from and with each other in the best possible way. We acknowledge that no race and no person is better than another. And we all experience this gift of life from our mutual creator. Thank you again for listening to Revolution Radio and supporting us here. And as always, I like to remind everyone that we do have the nav bar at the top of our cover page here, which includes our schedules for Studios A and B, our archives, that famous donation button, as well as some other tabs there. Another one is contact button. I don't know that anyone refers to it that often, but that's messaging to management if anyone feels a need to. As always, I like to give a special shout-out to the chatters here at Revolution Radio, whether you're listening now or later. And thanks, Pat, for signing me in here. I'm glad to get in. I will say that. I'll talk about it in a minute. As always, my Eagle Flower saying is, let's learn together and build our best future with clarity, strength, unity, and wisdom. Well, today is definitely one of versatility. And what a day, right? I for several hours, have been experiencing some serious lagging and freezing issues on my computer. It doesn't matter. Is it internet? Is even the Word document would freeze up on me. And I kept... logging out and doing a reboot and a restart, and it just continued on for several hours. This was going on, and at one point, The reboot lasted for about 45 minutes. So I have no idea what's going on, but I decided to do Plan B today. I see that the sound is clear, and that is good to hear. So what instead of what I was planning to do, which is more internet involved, I just decided to stick with my go to Plan B, so to speak. And what I'm going to do is stay away from the computer as much as possible and simply read from a book. Well, several weeks ago, you may remember that I read from Don Brunk's book of Animal Voices, and she kept and continues throughout her book, of which I still haven't gotten back to. She continues to refer to this guy called J. Allen Boone, and his last name is spelled just like Daniel, so I have no idea if he's related to Daniel Boone or not. But this guy wrote one book that was published in 1943, I believe it is. And the book that I got of him yesterday in the mail is published, I believe, 1954, yes. And this particular book is called Kinship with All Life. So we're going to hear it for the first time as I turn these pages and read. I did begin to read his other book, and he's a very entertaining writer. I noticed today the back cover recommendation is by none other than Joel Goldsmith. And here is what Joel Goldsmith said about this book. Is there a universal language of love, kinship with all life, that can open new horizons of experience? Example after example in this unique classic from Strongheart, the actor dog, to Freddy the Fly, resounds with entertaining and inspiring proof that communication with animals is a wonderful, indisputable fact. All that is required is an attitude of openness, friendliness, humility, and a sense of humor to part the curtain and form bonds of real friendship. For anyone who loves animals, for all those who have ever experienced the special devotion only a pet can bring, kinship with all life is an unqualified delight. Sample these pages and you will never encounter just a dog again, but rather a fellow member of nature's own family. And yes, this is basically a paperback book. I did buy it secondhand, and the edges or pages are turning a little brown, but it's in very good condition. So it feels like it has hardly ever been opened. Forward. As we live through these kaleidoscopic days when confusion, distrust, conflict, and misery are so common everywhere, it is revealing to note that more and more people are finding reassurance and peace of mind in companionship beyond the boundaries of humanity. They are making friends not only with such conventional favorites as dogs, horses, cats, and birds, but with wild animals, snakes, and insects. I might interrupt here a second and say that he will get into it in a bit, but basically he was of the era that lived through World War II. And this dog that he's going to be talking about was a military dog during that war. And I'm just trying to put into context of where he's coming from as the time period that he was writing here. And going back, men and women everywhere are being made acutely aware of the fact that something essential to life and well-being is flickering very low in the human species and threatening to go out entirely. This something has to do with such values as love, unselfishness, integrity, sincerity, loyalty to one's best, honesty, enthusiasm, humility, goodness, happiness, fun. Practically every animal still has these assets in abundance and is eager to share them, given opportunity and encouragement. In this connection, it is interesting to recall that people of certain ancient times appear to have been virtuosos in the art of living, particularly skilled in the delicate science of being in right relations with everything. Got to turn the page here. Everything, including animals. These people recognize the inseparable unity of creator and creation. They were able to blend themselves with the universal presence, power, and purpose that is forever moving back of all things, in all things, and through all things. Life to these ancients was an all-inclusive kinship in which nothing was meaningless, nothing unimportant, and from which nothing could be excluded. They refused to make any separating barriers between mineral and vegetable, between vegetable and man, or between man and the great primal cause which animates and governs all things. Every living thing was seen as a partner in a universal enterprise. Each had an individual contribution to make to the general good which it and it alone could supply. Everything lived for everything else at all times and under all circumstances. Those were the days when the whole earth was of one language and speech, and all was one grand concord. Humans, animals, snakes, birds, insects, all shared a common language. By means of this language, all were able to express their thoughts and feelings freely on matters of mutual interest. From out of divinely bestowed wisdom, they could reason together for the common good, the common happiness, and the common fun. Evidently, this was so simple and natural a part of everyday living as not to need explaining any more than breathing. However one may regard this ancient relationship phenomena, there is evidence that at one time on Earth, every living thing was able to be in rational correspondence with everything else. Humans and animals moved in full accord, not only with one another, but with the cosmic plan as well. Can we, modern humans, recapture this seemingly lost universal language? Can we, by means of it, learn to move in genuine good fellowship, not only with the members of our own species, but with other creatures? I believe that we can. In support of this faith, I have set down in the following pages the true stories of a number of unconventional relationships with animals, reptiles, insects, and even bacteria. None of these adventures was planned or expected. They came into experience as part of the gracious unfoldment of life itself. I begin with the story of the all-time great motion picture dog star, Strong Heart. As you read these stories, you will see that whenever I was properly humble and willing to let something besides a human be my instructor, these various four-legged, six-legged, and no-legged fellows shared priceless wisdom with me. They taught me that perfect understanding and perfect cooperation between the human and all other forms of life is unfailing whenever the human really does his required part. This has so enriched and broadened my life, has opened up such fascinating new regions to explore and enjoy, that I feel obligated to share at least some of my joy with others. Signed off by J. Allen Boone. Chapter 1, Four-Legged Meteor. Of all the impacts made on the colorful world of entertainment, few have surpassed that effected by the fabulous German Shepherd dog Strongheart. Sweeping suddenly into public notice like a meteor, he became Hollywood's top-ranking screen star and its biggest box office attraction. For over 3 years, he was the most admired and most loved object above the motion picture horizon. Then, with the continuing sweep of a meteor, he disappeared the earth scene and human visibility, leaving millions of men, women, and children admirers in all parts of the world. If you were fortunate enough to have seen Strongheart in some of his films, the mere mention of his name is sure to bring fond recollections. And I have to say, I don't remember Strongheart, but that doesn't mean I didn't see him in some very young years of some of the old black and whites. I just don't know. I haven't had a chance to see what Strongheart is famous in acting. And going back, you recall a big, magnificent built dog who did almost incredible things and did them with an intelligence and ease that baffled conventional explanation. If you never saw him in the movies, he is still well worth knowing because of the great things he continues to share across time, space, and the phenomenon of death itself. Strongheart came to Hollywood as the result of an idea on the part of two widely known entertainment creating personalities, Jane Murfin, a distinguished writer of stage and screenplays, and Larry Trimble, a producer and director. Larry was in a class all by himself when it came to understanding wild and domestic animals and persuading them to work for him in front of motion picture cameras. Jane and Larry's idea was to search the world for an unusual dog, bring him to Hollywood and star him in a series of special dramatic films. Dogs had been used before as bit players in screen stories, but this was the first time that a dog was to be given the leading role in a major production and top billing in all advertising and publicity. The dog they finally decided upon because of his looks, size, background, and accomplishments was Strongheart, whose kennel name in Germany had been Etzel von Oringen. Strongheart came from a long line of carefully bred, highly efficient, blue-ribboned shepherd dogs, all of which had won their awards not only for the finest in physical appearance, but also for their ability to qualify as work, police, and war dogs. Strongheart's father was the international champion Norris, and the only dog that was ever able to beat him in open competition was Strongheart. Strongheart was a dog man's dream of a dog, having in perfection all the qualities that a dog of his type is supposed to have. He was powerfully built, unusually capable, and utterly fearless. His weight fluctuated between 115 and 125 pounds. yet he moved with amazing speed and agility. He had to, in order to accomplish what he did in military and police work. And so to Hollywood, to try his luck in the movies, came this big German Shepherd, a famous champion in his own country, but practically unknown on this side of the Atlantic, except to the relatively few who, for professional reasons, kept a watchful eye on dog show winners throughout the world. Strongheart crossed the United States from New York to Los Angeles as just another dog in the baggage car. There was no one of importance to greet him when he arrived, no reporters, no cameramen. Without ceremony, he was removed from the baggage car, placed in quite an ordinary automobile, and taken to a Hollywood studio where screen tests of him were to be made. None of the members of the film colony knew that he was coming, and if they had, it would have created little interest. Dogs for movie purposes at that time were a dime a dozen. A little over a year later, Strongheart was again placed on a train. But this time, he did not have to ride in the baggage car. Instead, he was escorted with all possible honors through lanes of excited admirers and placed in a special suite aboard the best train out of Los Angeles. He was attended by a manager, a valet, a press agent, and a special representative of the railroad, who was there to see that he got the best and only the best of everything. By nationwide demand, Strongheart was making a personal appearance tour of the country. From coast to coast, newspapers, magazines, the radio, and electric signs were proclaiming to the world that a sensational new star had appeared in the movie heavens, that he was a dog, and that his name was Strongheart. At every stop, the train made crowds of people were on hand to acclaim the new celebrity. And in those cities where he was to make a theater appearance, special citizens formally welcomed him, hung a key to the city around his neck, and paraded him to the most important hotel where the best suite of rooms could be ready for him and his staff. This wave of popularity was the result of a motion picture written by Jane Murfin and directed by Larry Trimble entitled The Silent Call, with Strongheart in the leading role and a cast of well-known Hollywood actors supporting him in the minor parts. Can you imagine being a bit player to a dog? The novelty of the production, the emotional and dramatic sweep of the story, the rugged outdoor backgrounds, and the irresistible appeal of the big dog made the film a recording-breaking success. The success of The Silent Call sent Hollywood producers into a mad scramble to make dog pictures. Other German shepherds were brought from Germany. New sensational dog finds were made in this country, and all hurried to Hollywood as starring material. But the incomparable Strongheart towered above them all in looks, character, accomplishments, and audience appeal. Following The Silent Call came other pictures, and their titles are Brawn of the North, and Brawn is B-R-A-W-N, The Love Master, and Jack London's White Fang, in all of which Strongheart played the leading roles, roles tailored to his exact measurements by Jane Murfin, roles which enabled him to demonstrate as never before how wonderfully intelligent and capable a dog can be when it is understood and given the right kind of cooperation. Each time a new film was released, thousands of enthusiasts were added to Strongheart's army of admirers. With his fame reaching into every part of the world, where motion pictures were shown, Strongheart became the number one attraction in the world of entertainment, the most glittering of all the Hollywood stars, the monarch of all he surveyed. But at heart, he was always just a dog, with no greater ambition than simply to be of service and to share his all. Well, I think Mr. Boone gave us a nice intro to who Strongheart is, huh? Chapter 2, Good Man Friday. At the height of all this glory, there was an interruption in the busy Strongheart filmmaking schedule while new production plans were worked out. It was necessary for Larry Trimble and his assistants temporarily to leave California, and Strongheart went to live with Jane Murfin. Jane, however, received a hurry call to come to New York to help get one of her plays ready for a Broadway production. And this created a major problem. What to do with their valuable four-legged property while she and Mr. Trimble were away from the city? What Strongheart needed was a kind of Good Man Friday, someone to be with him continuously as a combination companion, valet, cook, chauffeur, secretary, and private audience. This honor was conferred on me. Considering the fact that I knew practically nothing at all about dogs and had had almost no experience with them, the assignment was as surprising to me as I know it must have been to Strongheart. But Jane Murfin and Larry Trimble were old and understanding friends. There was a state of emergency. I had plenty of time available and a keen inclination for such an adventure. Coming face to face with the real Strongheart for the first time was like nothing I had ever experienced before. I had watched him in all of his pictures with the professional eye of a writer and a film producer. But I had not realized until this first meeting of ours, how majestic, commanding, and even awesome he was. I would no more have presumed to reach over and pat him on the head than I would have dared to pat the head of the President of the United States. Keep in mind what year he's in, okay? The man who brought Strongheart to our meeting place talked to the dog as though he were not an animal, but an intelligent human being. Strongheart was told about the emergency situation, who I was, what I did for a living, and why I was there. And he was told that until further notice, he and I were to live together and do the best we could for each other. Strongheart listened with alert attention, giving the impression that he understood everything that was said to him. Now and then he would turn his head in my direction and sweep me from head to feet with his eyes, as though deciding for himself whether the reports about me balanced with his own private appraisal. Then I was handed a list of instructions. The loop of a well-worn leash was placed around Strongheart's neck and the other end in my hand, and that concluded the ceremony. Strongheart and I headed for the little house in the Hollywood Hills that I called home. As we walked along, I began reading my instructions. I was told what and when to feed my new companion, how to bathe and brush him, and what kind of exercise he should have every day. I was advised to treat him exactly as I would an intelligent human being. I was never under any circumstances to talk down my nose at him, to use baby talk with him, or to say anything to him with my lips that I did not sincerely mean in my heart. The instructions ended with the apparently serious recommendations that I read something worthwhile to him every day. When we reached the house, I turned the key in the front door. But before I could make the next move, Strongheart pushed me aside, clamped his strong jaws on the knob, turned it, opened the door, and marched in as though he owned the place. I meekly followed him in, wondering what it would please his four-legged highness to do next. It pleased him to give the entire house a going over, like a seasoned police inspector who wanted to be sure just what went on under that particular roof. He carefully examined every room, every window, every entrance, and every piece of furniture. He opened closet doors, stuck at least half of himself inside for looking and sniffing purposes, and then backed out again, closing the door behind him. For some time, I stood just inside the front door. Not once did he pay the slightest attention to me, and I had not the slightest idea what I should or should not do in this situation. I had supposed that a dog with his particular background, training, and experience would wait for me, his superior, to tell him what to do and when to do it. I had no idea that he would take over and manage things to suit himself. How were he and I ever going to get along together on the basis he seemed to be inaugurating? Strongheart finally finished his inspection of the house. Then he marched with his military stride to where I was standing, gave the back of one of my hands a brief dab with his tongue, and continued on out of doors to inspect the ground surrounding the house. I interpreted the tongue dab to mean that he had found the house and its furnishing satisfactory, at least for the time being. But I did not know how he regarded me in this new arrangement of ours, or how I was to proceed in taking care of him. But while I did not know the answers, I intuitively felt that he probably did, and that he might somehow or other be able to get the information across to me. For the first time, I understood how dumb a human can be in the presence of an intelligent animal. Chapter 3, Getting Acquainted. I have to say, this sounds like this is going to be a rather interesting chapter here, Getting Acquainted. Okay. When bedtime arrived, there came with it the question of where Strongheart was to sleep. His daylight activities had been carefully covered in the instructions, but no one had told me where he was accustomed to sleeping. He was too important a figure in the world of entertainment and motion pictures, it seemed to me, to be asked to sleep on the floor like an ordinary dog with perhaps an old blanket under him. But it was either the floor or into bed with me. Finally, after much consideration, I decided to share the bed with him. After getting into my pajamas, I crawled to the far side of the bed, leaving the rest of it for Strongheart. The rest of it commanding the best views and being the official getting in and outside. Strongheart had been keenly watching every move I made. Evidently, he had been expecting just such an arrangement, for he immediately leaped onto the bed, towering above me in the dim lighting of the room, in what seemed almost horse proportions. For some seconds he stared down at me and then began going round and round in a small circle, as though treading down invisible grass into suitable bedding for himself. When the imaginary grass, or whatever it was supposed to be, had been arranged to his satisfaction, he flung himself down. But something was wrong, for he got up again and began doing more of that circling and stamping, this time in the opposite direction. Finally satisfied, he dropped down again, let out a loud sigh, and became very still. Taking this to mean that he was permanently down for the night, I switched out the light and let out a long sigh. The day's adventure was over, or so I thought. On toward midnight, when our neighborhood was as quiet as all respectable neighborhoods should be at that hour, there was a number of sharp noises down the street. like an automobile engine backfiring. But Strongheart evidently interpreted it as gunfire. And he had been trained to do certain things when trouble like that started. So he took off, all 125 pounds of him. As he went out from his side of the bed, he catapulted me out from my side onto the floor. I got back into bed again, and several minutes later, Strongheart returned from the adjoining room, having determined that it was a false alarm. Jumping up on the bed again, he made a few more circles and then flung himself down with his rear end up where his head should have been and his head toward the foot of the bed. I asked him to turn himself around. He did so, but most reluctantly. About an hour later, there was another noise outside. Again, Strongheart went into action, and again I landed on the floor. As partial protection, not knowing what else to do, I pushed my side of the bed against the wall. I think I would have done the same. When Strongheart returned from his second false alarm, he again lay down with his head towards the foot of the bed. Once again, I had to ask him to turn himself around, and once again he did so, but as though he did not want to do it at all. And about dawn, there was yet another noise outside the house, and once again, outside the house, and once again, Strongheart bounded out of bed to see what was happening. And this time, I did not land on the floor. He merely flattened me against the wall. I was fed up with the whole adventure, particularly so when, for the third time, the dog lay down with his head toward the foot of the bed. He may have been loved by millions of people, but at that moment he was a colossal pain in the neck to me. I was sorry that I had ever met him socially. With some bluster, I ordered him out of bed. He leaped to the floor, swung around, and stood at a military attention. I sat on the edge of the bed, glaring at him. "Listen, Strongheart," I said. "I'm tired of having you kick me out of bed. It's got to stop, do you understand? Furthermore, this sleeping upside down in bed as you've been trying to do against my wishes and orders has got to stop, too." Strongheart stood with calm dignity, watching my face with unblinking eyes, an enigmatic expression on his face. And I continued, "You and I have to go on living with each other, whether we like the idea or not. Frankly, I don't like my part in it at all, but we're stuck with each other. I'm willing to make allowances for the way you have been jumping out of bed, but when you hear suspicious noises, since you are a police dog. But this sleeping with your rear end where your head ought to be is out." At this point, Strongheart suddenly moved forward, closed his jaws on one of my pajama sleeves, and tugged me gently but firmly to the foot of the bed. A short distance away were some very insecure old French windows covered by long curtains. Getting an end of one of these in his teeth, Strongheart pulled it back, held it there for a few seconds, and then let it drop back into position again. Then he began barking, swinging his head rhythmically back and forth between the French windows and me. Had he spoken in perfect English, he could not have told me more clearly what he wanted me to know, that whenever he lay down to relax, either temporarily or for his night's sleep, he always wanted to have the front end of himself, his eyes, nose, ears, and jaws, aimed in the direction of possible danger. If trouble did enter in human form, he could go into action without having to lose time by turning around. And those old French windows were certainly a possible trouble entrance. Strongheart had been leaping out of bed to investigate suspicious noises, and he had been lying upside down in bed, not to please himself, but to take care of me as he had been taught to do. As this became clear to me, I experienced a kind of humility I had never known before. we compromised the situation by turning the bed around so that we could both lie with our heads in the direction of the suspicious old French windows. Okay. Chapter 4, Puzzlement. Strongheart was so pleased with the new arrangement that he gave the side of my face a couple of dabs with his tongue, heaved a deep sigh, relaxed like an old shirt that had been dropped into a laundry basket, and went serenely to sleep. But there was no sleep for me. I was wide awake with amazement. I had spoken to Strongheart in my kind of language, a language of thoughts and feelings encased in human sound symbols. He had actually been able to receive and understand what I had said. Then he had answered me in his kind of language, a language made up of simple sounds and pantomime, which he obviously felt I could follow without too much difficulty. Strongheart had understood me perfectly. And then, with his keen and penetrating dog wisdom, he had made it possible for me to understand him, too. For the first time, I was actually conscious of being in rational correspondence with an animal. With the dog's patient and guiding help, we had been able to communicate our individual states of mind to each other, to exchange points of view and thereby to solve a difficulty that threatened to mar our relationship. His innate wisdom had topped my intellectual reasoning at every point. I realized how little I knew about the mental capacities of a dog and his ability to express these capacities in a practical way. I had been privileged to watch an animal acting upon its own initiative put into expression qualities of independent thinking, of clear reasoning, of good judgment, of foresight, of prudence, of common sense. I had been taught to believe that these qualities belong more or less exclusively to the members of the human species, or rather to the educated members of our species. And here was a dog overflowing with them. Hour after hour, I lay there listening to Strongheart's deep, regular breathing, trying to unriddle him. But the more I worked at it, the more puzzling he became. At dawn, while he slumbered peacefully on, I was still surrounded by spinning question marks, still reviewing all sorts of beliefs having to do with animals in general, and dogs in particular. One thing was clear. I certainly was taking care of something far greater and more significant than just a dog, as I had been accustomed to evaluating a dog. And I saw that the important thing for me to know about Strongheart was not so much his physical body, but rather his large invisible embodiment of thoughts, feelings, and character. It occurred to me that if I were going to be able to keep really rational company with this amazing dog by my side, I would have to begin doing two important things at once. First, find out all that I could about Strongheart as a mental entity. And second, try in all possible ways to discover how we were related as individual expressions of life in a highly intelligent universe. It became apparent that something, which could well be spelled out with a capital S, had already linked Strongheart and me in inseparable kinship. Even though he walked the earth on four legs and I only on two, and even though, according to popular human belief, that dog and I appeared to be so unrelated in so many different ways. But how, I wondered, does one go about solving such kinship mysteries between himself and a dog? Who or what does he consult for the right directions? Or is it wiser to do such exploring alone, following one's own inner leadings? Chapter 5, Keeping Company. It was not easy to qualify as a companion for the famous dog movie star. The difficulty was Strongheart himself. He was too mysterious, too self-contained, too capable, too much a sacred cow for one with my limited knowledge of dogs. What I really rated was a more common specimen, a dog, say, from the city animal shelter, who not only needed a friend, but had to have one in order to escape the fate of unwanted animals. Strongheart was the most extraordinary animal I had ever come upon in any part of the world. He was particularly distinctive in his thinking processes, in the way he could reason things through, for himself, arrive at his own conclusions, and then translate those conclusions into practical action without human assistance. Such independence and wisdom in a dog was hard to believe even while watching it in operation. Strongheart had many toys sent to him by admirers from all parts of the world, and he was very fond of playing with them. When he was in the mood for this kind of fun, he would open the closet door where the toys were kept, study them for a while, then pick up the one he fancied with his teeth, back out, carefully close the door behind him, and take the toy out into the yard and play with it. And just reading this now, I'm going, he does better than an average child does, right? Oh, my. When he had had enough of this kind of fun, he would bring his toy back into the house again, open the closet door, place the plaything exactly where he had found it, and then back out, carefully closing the door behind him. If he saw me begin any work, bed making, house cleaning, moving furniture, washing the car, or working in the garden, he would always insist upon helping, using his jaws in place of hands, and always making a real contribution. I had been authorized to take full charge of Strongheart and to manage all of his private and public activities, but he began reversing this arrangement minutes after we had been left together. He took charge of me as though he were the human and I the dog. His background, of course, had included police and war work, so he was accustomed to taking charge of people and things. He was not the kind of a dog one would care to dispute matters of this kind with, not with his physical setup and combat record. He accepted me readily enough as his emergency associate, as he had been told to do, but he usually gave the impression that he was really in charge and that any authority I assumed was a temporary concession. I had always considered it my privilege and right to go to bed at whatever time it pleased me to do so, and to get up again whenever I felt like it, providing, of course, I was not acting contrary to duty. But Strongheart did not approve of this habit, probably because of his strict military training in Germany. His custom was to bounce out of bed at precisely 6 o'clock every morning, full of energy, spontaneity, and enthusiasm. He did not have to be let out. He would open all the doors and let himself out. There was an old door between the bedroom and living room, which now and then would resist him on his way out. This he regarded as a personal effrontery. He would make danger sounds in his throat, clamp his powerful jaws on the knob, and throwing all of his 125 pounds into the effort, pull the old door off its hinges. Within the hour, he would come racing back into the bedroom again, supercharged with fresh air, vitality, and excitement, and start flinging barks at me to advise me that it was time for me to be up, around, and doing, especially in connection with his breakfast. If there was no response, he would pull all the clothes off the bed and drag them to the far side of the room. If that did not get results, he would take hold of my pajamas and tug on them until either I or a section of the pajamas left with him. In the evening, when he had decided that I had been up long enough, he would begin barking and pulling at my clothes to inform me officially that it was time for me to quit whatever I was doing and retire for the night. If I happened to have a book in my hands, he would often snatch it from me, running into the adjoining room with it and drop it on the bed, to let me know that was where I belonged until further orders from him. God. Like nearly all dogs, as well as practically all children that have not been blocked in their natural growing and expanding, Strongheart was a master of the art of living fully and completely in the here and now of things. He always made the immediate occasion and the immediate circumstance yield some kind of a dividend in interest and fun. Even when he seemed to be sleeping, this magic still went on, for his body would vibrate, twitch, jerk, and jump as he participated in all kinds of adventure in the kingdom of his own imagination. Strongheart clearly believed that life is for living and sharing as fully as possible, and that the world is not an arena, but a playground. He began showing me how our relationship could be turned into a continuous holiday. Parts of this holiday we observed at home, and the rest exploring open country. The holidays at home resulted from duties which could not be avoided. While I attended to these, Strongheart would entertain himself. He sensed that I was not to be disturbed when I was at work at my desk, and he never intentionally did so. He was a constant interrupter, nevertheless, because I could not resist watching him and the interesting things he did under his own planning and initiative. During these at-home occasions, Strongheart would put on his own private shows. He was the producer and manager, the entertainer, the entertainment, and the audience, too. He was the whole show, and he never gave himself a dull moment. If dullness did creep in, he would quit and do something else. The only other living things he ever shared these playtimes with were bugs. They fascinated and delighted him. Whenever he found one crawling along the ground, he would trail it with intense curiosity and friendliness, trying to find out where the little fellow was going and what it would do when it got there. Perhaps the most unforgettable of those shows of his were the ones he put on with an old shoe that he had found on one of our walks, and for which he had a great fondness. He executed four-legged dance patterns with the old shoe as a kind of symbol which he alone knew how to interpret. He did dramatic play vignettes in which the old shoe seemed to serve as an emblem for everything he liked or did not like. And he gave just as magnificent a performance playing with that old shoe in the backyard, with no one but me watching him, as he did in front of motion picture cameras or admiring and applauding theater audiences. Wow. I have to say, J. Allen Boone, well, given the fact that he was a movie producer, writer, does have a way with his words, and I hope that you're finding this entertaining. I'm not sure. I'll see if they have enough time here to read this. Mind Reader, Chapter 6. As day followed day in our retreat in the Hollywood Hills, far removed from the parade grounds of the current movie gods and goddesses, the stalking publicity hounds and the ceaseless noises of the publicity sirens, the more wonderful and incomprehensible Strongheart became to me. The part of him with which I slept, ate, walked, and played was relatively easy to understand, but not the mental part of him, not the mysterious, invisible portion of him that functioned so effectively back of his physical exterior and enabled him to do the extraordinary things he did. Then one day something happened which gave to our relationship entirely new meaning and direction. It was a particularly beautiful spring morning after many days of rain. From the Pacific Ocean, shifting wind brought an exhilarating salt tang. And from the desert country in the opposite direction, a warm scent of sage. It was not the kind of day for anyone to be sitting at a desk fingering a typewriter, nor was it the kind of weather to be experienced merely through open doors and windows. "Shall I be a man and finish this writing job?" I asked myself. "Or shall I be a mouse, quit the whole thing and take Strongheart into the hills for the rest of the day and evening?" There was not much argument. I decided to be a mouse. Within a few seconds after this decision had been made, the back door was knocked violently open, and in rushed Strongheart in a frenzy of excitement, skidding to where I was sitting. He gave the back of one of my hands a brief dab with his tongue, raced into the bedroom, and came out almost immediately with the old sweater I always wore on our outings. Then into the bedroom again and back with my blue jeans. Then came one of my walking boots, then its mate. Then my Irish walking stick. All of these things he carefully placed at my feet. In 5 swiftly executed trips into the bedroom, he had brought to me all the things I needed for our trip in the back country. Then bouncing and swirling and barking with everything he could put into it, he made it clear that he felt we should leave at once and sooner if possible. I stared at him in stunned amazement. How did the dog know that I had changed my plans and was going to take him on an outing? There had been no outward communication between us at all. As a matter of fact, I had not known where he was, except in a general way, for some hours. In the supposed privacy of my open mind, I had suddenly changed intention. And then he appeared on the scene knowing all about it. Until late into the night, Strongheart and I wandered about in the hill country, he looking for adventure while I trailed after him, as intellectually dizzy and confused as I have been in my life. As we were nearing home on the return trip, it came to me that Strongheart had been reading my mind in this manner ever since our first meeting, but that I had not been alert or wise enough to notice it before. I began to recall time after time when Strongheart must have known my intentions and plans before I had been able to set them in outward motion. How does he do it? I kept asking myself over and over. Is this mind-reading ability something that is innate and natural in all dogs? Perhaps in all animals? Oh my gosh, I'm hearing the sound. Thanks so much for listening. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
At Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist, featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays 2-4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion.